Trap 2024! The Butcher, an infamous serial killer, is rumored to be at a Lady Raven concert based on a sliver of a receipt found somewhere at some point. And what do America's finest do in response to this?
Well, they send every single officer in their employment to
Hell
be briefed
yes!
mid-raid and get completely bamboozled time and time and time and time again.
Only for our dearest Lady Raven to be the one to crack the case and get the Butcher locked up for good. Or did she? I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane.
And welcome to the Every Movie Ever Podcast!
That's right, we're diving into Trap, Ben's favourite film of 2024 for all sorts of reasons, most of them wrong.
All of them wrong.
Some of them right. Some of them right.
All of them wrong. I hear what you're saying. I love it. I'm into it. How are we doing, buddy?
Well, I feel odd. My entire podcasting setup has been collapsed.
You look strange.
I'm on a new microphone.
You are. It sounds crisp.
Yeah, well, sort of. Yeah, crispy. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Then it's a crispy film. We're having a crispy time.
It's
you
a
know?
Crispy time.
Everything's crispy.
Drop it in the fryer.
Yeah, this is my last record in Gloucestershire. The next record we do will be in the same room and everything will go wrong. Yeah.
Everything changes now. This is where we've peaked and it's all downhill from here because we can physically hit each other.
Don't say we've peaked. Well, this is the bottom. this is the bottom and it gets better from here. That has to be true, Ben.
That's what peaked means, right?
How are you?
I'm fine. I'm fucked, but I'm fine.
Right?
Lady Raven makes it better. Lady Raven makes the pain go away. Lovely Lady Raven.
I know what pain, but tell the listener what pain, Ben.
My lungs collapsed again, and no one knows why.
For those who have just joined us for the first time,
yeah.
Just quickly, within the 30 seconds that we've allowed for the intro,
okay.
Just catch them up on what's going on.
In the last 5 months, my lung has collapsed 3 times. No one knows why. No one understands why. I was being monitored for a while. It got better.
Mm.
It got fixed. And then today I go in and he's like, have you changed something? Is something going on? I was like, nothing. I'm going to the gym a bit more. And he was like, can you not go to the gym? And I was like, sure. If you would like me to kill myself, I cannot go to the gym anymore. And he was like, okay, so the gym is fine.
Right.
Bad news. Your lung has collapsed again. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, okay. I mean, 3 collapsed lungs is
in 5
mental.
Months.
I know.
I only have 2. You know what I mean?
Right. Should we get into the film?
Let's get into the show. Well, we're tackling all the tough questions, buddy. Like, what the fuck is this?
Has M. Night Shyamalan lost his fucking mind? Or is he just living his best life, unapologetically making exactly the films he wants to make?
But most importantly, my dear listener, what the fuck is this? Should we break down the movie?
Yeah.
If you've not seen this, dear listener, go and watch it immediately because we're getting slippy and spoilery.
And crispy. I wrote this one for you.
You did?
Now, bearing in mind, I'm very confused about mm-hmm. what happened in this film.
Oh, you are not the only one, good sir. Everyone is.
It is nonsense. So I've tried...
Yes.
Sometimes we play around with the breakdown and we do like, oh, what a fun subversion of what happens in this film. This is, for those of you who haven't seen it, this is exactly what happens in the film.
Yeah, I'm ready for it. Right, you ready?
Yeah.
Philadelphia firefighter Cooper Abbott takes his daughter, Riley, to a Lady Raven concert where he notices a heavy police presence.
Mm.
Lady Raven is played by M. Night Shyamalan's daughter, and the first 50% of this film is going to be a showcase of her music career. Yes, it is. Yes, it will be shameless. Oh, that was your next sentence.
That was my next sentence.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. I knew. I know you. Yeah. I know you.
A vendor tells Cooper the FBI is hunting the Butcher, a serial killer who is secretly Cooper himself. That's not a spoiler.
Of course.
It was in the trailer.
Right.
Checking footage of his latest captive, also in the trailer, he steals an ID card and a police radio. Hearing someone predict his moves over the radio, he learns the manhunt is led by legendary FBI profiler Dr. Josephine Grant. Jurassic Park, anyone?
That's what I wondered. I thought, is she related
yeah.
to Ian Grant? Because chaos theory, predicting what's going to happen. And I do feel like in this movie, life finds a way.
It really does. It really does. In an attempt to get to the roof, he throws syrup bottles, jokes on you, it's palm oil.
Right.
He throws syrup bottles into the fryer at a concession stand, creating a distracting explosion of boiling oil and broken glass. And that, sir, is 100% a truth fact.
Right.
Riley is chosen as Lady Raven's crowd participation meat puppet and gets backstage access, providing Cooper with an escape route. Convenient.
Mm-hmm.
He blackmails the singer into helping him by coming clean to her as he threatens his captive's life, who he can kill via Bluetooth.
Come on, it's basically, he gets his phone out, he's like, I can kill him, I can kill him.
I'm can like, do it with carbon monoxide, body wants it.
Yeah, Alexa, kill my captive.
That's exactly what it is.
You're right.
Lady Raven turns the tables, using Riley's excitement as a means of giving them all a lift home. At Riley's house, Lady Raven, yes, she went all the way to the house, and then inside the house.
Yeah.
Lady Raven steals Cooper's phone, she does, live streams his victim's location, she does.
Yes, she does that.
And exposes him as the butcher to his wife.
Mm.
As Cooper locks his family upstairs, Lady Raven alerts her driver to call the police. A struggle lets her escape from Cooper's grasp, and the FBI arrives. Cooper disguises himself as a SWAT team member.
Yeah, because there's a tunnel in the house.
To the next door neighbor's garden. Obviously, everyone has one. If you don't, give me a ring. I'm an installer. We'll get talking.
You are a mole.
30% discount. Use code EMEPODCAST, bro. He kidnaps Lady Raven, but fans stop him, allowing the FBI to catch up.
Because there's a tunnel in the limousine.
There's not. I went back and I've watched this scene countless times. Take a look at this one, Rob.
Okay, right.
There he is. There he is, right in the audience there.
Oh, okay.
Putting his hood up. There you go. He's already out at the limo.
I was sure he built a tunnel because they literally show him building a tunnel in the previous scene. I was like, this guy is a miner.
That I can't say for sure that there was no tunnel in that limo.
Right.
Because to be fair,
he had a mannequin.
The door doesn't open.
No.
So how the fuck did he get out? All right. Yes, sounds.
Right.
Changing clothes, he escapes the limo and returns home. Where else are you going to go? It's his house. Where else are you going to go?
You've been exposed as a serial killer. Do you know what I'll return to? My postal address.
But he has OCD, Rob. He fixes a towel. You see it.
No. He's got the OCD that like crystal witches say they have when you put...
My moissanite can't go next to my roserite.
Right, exactly. Because I've got OCD rather than like the real OCD, which is I washed my hands so much they bleed.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, I've got OCD. No, that's not what OCD is.
This is all very judgmental. Cooper might have fixed that towel 48 times. We've just seen him do it once. And you're very judgmental right now, Rob. It's 2025.
Right, okay.
Let a man fix his towel.
He's got OCD.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Let him have OCD, all right? Mercury's in retrograde.
Yeah. Like, you've got autism and I've got ADHD. Self-diagnosed.
I mean, it is self-diagnosis, but also the summon. You know what I mean?
No. There's something, but I've got no time for self-diagnosis anymore.
I score so high on autism tests. It's unreal. It's the only test I do good on.
What, on BuzzFeed?
No. Fuzzbead?
That's the dyslexia.
At home, Cooper's wife reveals she suspected him and tipped off the FBI. She's the one that found a bit of a receipt and immediately phoned the FBI?
No. She suspected that he was the killer because of the smell of murder on his clothes.
That could be anything.
So she went to his murder house and left a bit of receipt for the concert ticket. So she had a whole receipt she could have left there.
Right.
She just thought, no, that's too easy for him. And they, you know, they're like a dog. They like the hunt.
Right.
I'll leave a bit of receipt.
So she tipped the police off anonymously via receipt. This is nonsense. Let me get back to this. Cooper plans a murder-suicide, but is tricked into eating a slice of drug pie, hallucinating his mother's approval, who turns out to actually be Dr. Grant manipulating him.
Dr. Josephine Grant, the FBI profiler, not Jeff Goldblum saying life finds a way, shirtless in a black shirt.
Okay, that's...
Although I'd arguably walk towards that before I walk towards my mum.
Fair. Fair. Also same. As he's arrested, he shares a final moment with Riley, because that's what all SWAT members do.
That's what they do. They go, right, your dad's been outed as a serial killer. We've taken you to a safe place, but now he's arrested.
Let's go give him a cuddle. Just go say your bye.
Because we want this trauma to be permanent.
Yeah. Taken away in the police van, Cooper secretly unchains his cuffs and laughs at the camera because, as he was giving Riley a hug and picking up a bike off his lawn because it was knocked over in his OCD, we've discussed this, he stole a bike spoke from the wheel and no one noticed him slide it up his sleeve anyway.
They just fall off.
He's laughing at us. We've got this far.
That's the joke. That's what he's laughing at. He looks at the camera and he laughs down the camera and I'm like,
I like it, joke.
That's at my expense for getting 2 hours and 10 minutes into this nonsense.
A, it's an hour 45. I've watched this film.
Oh yeah, no. It's an hour 45, but it feels like 2 hours and 8 months.
It feels like 25 minutes. It's a fucking joyous experience. I'm going to die on this hill. I'm going to make a bold statement right now at the top of the episode. Top of the show. About Trap 2024, all right?
Right, yeah.
Trap 2024 is the best film that came out in 2024.
Okay, that's just not true.
By an enormous mile.
That's just not true.
By the end of this episode, you'll understand why I love it so much, right?
Yeah, okay.
But that's my bold statement for now. Best film of 2024, Trap.
I've got to get this off my chest at the top of the episode as well.
Do it.
Because you've just said that this is the best film of 2024. Now, I imagine something that's capable of being the best film is unable to be improved.
Okay, I may have misspoken.
I'm glad it took a whole hour to disprove your theory.
Hold on, no. I misspoke, okay. Sorry. Trap 2024, best movie of 2024. Right. Not the best film.
Okay.
If we're looking at film, then this is terrible. If we're looking at movies,
best movie of 2024. Just quickly, I just got to get this off my chest at the top of the episode.
Hit me.
The best movie of 2024 should be unable to be improved, right?
No, that's categorically not true. Movies are a state of mind, Rob. Movies are where you can frolic in the fields.
I'm saying staying within the frolicking in the fields, right?
I'm with you.
There is immediately something that I felt that this film was desperately missing.
Okay, hit me with it.
At no point did Admiral Akbar turn up and go, "It's a trap!"
Okay, now I have a reason for this. I know exactly why this happened.
Why it didn't happen, because it needed to.
The reason Admiral Akbar didn't show up, buddy, is this was self-financed.
Oh, they can't afford him.
This was 100% financed by a loan against M. Night Shyamalan's property.
Right.
He puts loans up against his personal assets and then makes these batshit insane films because studios will no longer give him money.
Okay, that leans into part of what I want to talk about this week. I know you've watched this a lot.
A lot.
A lot, a lot, a lot. I've watched this.
I'm well into double digits.
I've watched this once and it was for this episode.
And it was your first time.
And it was my first time. And
excellent.
It is absolute nonsense, but like the aforementioned Crystal Witch Girl or an Aero Bar. An Aero Bar's good. In reality, it's cheap and nasty, but it's got fun holes.
Yeah.
And if you can spend time enjoying those holes, you can have a good time.
Exactly. Just like the Crystal Witch.
Exactly. Like, you kind of go, oh, I don't want that. It's cheap and nasty. But then you're like, But
it is quite fun because you don't know whether you're going to wake up stabbed or not.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
It's a fun thing.
I'd let them throw palm oil in my fryer, you know?
1,000%. 1,000%. I'd watch them do it and stand
over
it.
I've got a lot to say about that scene, but I want to know why you've watched this film 23 times.
Okay. Okay, right. I don't know how many times I've watched this film because I've sincerely lost count. I know that sounds stupid.
Yeah, no.
But this is the film that I need to explain it, right? This is one of those, it's one of these magic films, and I don't know how these films exist or why they hit me the way they do. It's set in reality, right?
Right.
But it's not our reality, but it's just reality adjacent enough for it to be escapism. So it's not real life because it's insane.
Finish your sentence, because...
I'm going to get there. Hold on. I saw this in the cinema and I loved every single second of it because from the trailer, I was like, ooh, Shyamalan back.
Right, okay. Right, yeah. Oh,
Shyamalan back.
Back to his peak.
Ready for the twists and the turns. Right. I'm thinking like Sixth Sense, Signs, Unbreakable. I'm like, dude, he's going to be on form for this. You know what I mean? He's going to be big.
Okay, that's your Shyamalan top three. I'm kind of more, I don't know, Lady in the Water, Glass.
Glass was terrible. I've never seen Lady in the Water.
It's just as bad. Oh, The Happening.
Okay.
Ben.
Oh, dude, The Happening's amazing, for a start.
The Happening is legitimately brilliant.
Yeah, it's so
dumb.
For
all the reasons that this is brilliant.
Exactly. So I watched this in the cinema, right? And I went in thinking it was going to be amazing. And very, very quickly, I realized that this was in no way taking itself seriously, because if it was, this is insane.
And once I'd settled into that fact very quickly, I immediately started having the most fun I have ever had in the cinema, ever.
Yeah.
Like, I went to see this with Andy from the Control Alt Critique podcast. Go listen to him if you haven't. They're fantastic. Andy from Control Alt Critique and his wife, Lars. And we were sitting there and we'd all been like really looking forward to this film. Now, Andy and Lars like films.
Yes.
Ben like movies.
Right.
Andy also like movies, but not as much as Ben like movies because Ben doesn't understand film.
And you know, for new listeners, we're saying movies are kind of popcorn entertainment and films are things that make you think. And they're both relevant and useful,
exactly,
but different products, right?
100%. Films are there to give you, that you take away something to add to your life. Movies are there for escapism.
Films are album tracks, movies are singles.
Exactly. And I fucking love a single. you know what I mean?
You love the Beatles.
I can put that in my Walkman. Right, oh, mate, right. Exactly. Put that in my Walkman all day long. So we're sitting there in the cinema and it keeps getting worse and worse. And I can feel Andy and Lars getting angrier and angrier. And it's making me happier. And I don't know why, because it's the stuff they were saying was totally legitimate. They were like, this is fucking stupid. And I'm like, yes. Isn't it fantastic?
It's the joy you get from any good, bad, like bad, good film. Like Love on a Leash is unironically one of my favorite films to show people.
Yeah.
I would never watch it alone.
No, of course not. I mean, I can't say that about Trap. I've watched it alone.
That is insane.
So many times.
That is insane.
After coming out of the cinema and realizing that this is an absolute train wreck, but it's so expensive, so well made, and it's literally utter nonsense, I was like, this might be my favorite film that I've seen in the cinema this entire year. I've shown it to five people, Rob, and the reaction that all five people have had, one, it's like domino effect, right?
Yeah.
So I showed it to one person, me and Amber from Control Alt Critique as well. We watched it. She loved it. It was incredible. Alex was with us. Alex loved it. This was all insane. And then I was like, oh, Adam needs to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know who joined in for that viewing? Amber and Alex. It was their second watch through and we were immediately like, yes, put it on immediately. It's amazing. All three of us were sitting there being like, this has ruined our day multiple times. Let it ruin yours.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's incredible. But as I was saying, set in reality, just reality adjacent enough for it to be, I guess, technically classed as fantasy. And I fucking love a good fantasy idea, mate.
I will stab you with a knife. I will cut your face. One of my favorite films of all time, The Princess Bride. And you're there just going, oh, it's soft. It's soft. Basically Lord of the Rings with kissing.
Mate, Helen at the Boardroom Gaming Cafe literally came up to me today. I went in to say hello. She was like, we're going to fight. I'm going to give you a hug first, but then we're going to fight. Mm. And it was the most passionate conversation I've ever had about The Princess Bride.
It's fine because, you know, we can do it again at any point now we've done it, right? No. Oh, no, wait. That's there forever. That's one of my favorite films forever, just lost.
It is. It is. Welcome to Clerks 3.
There's a strange dynamic in this film.
Hit me with it.
And I feel like M. Night Shyamalan knows that the attention that he's getting is waning. He is no longer the culturally relevant director that he once was. He is no longer commanding the same budgets. He's no longer commanding the same cultural interest. Movies generally are not commanding the same cultural interest that they once did.
I'll agree with that statement. The budgets thing,
he's got his own arrangements with the budget, and I'm interested to hear that because I've heard a bit and it sounds fascinating. So I'm looking forward to you getting into that later. But I do feel like this is a man who kind of knows that his time on stage is finite, and it feels like that he's doing what he can before that door closes forever to give his kids a leg up. Mm-hmm. He lent his name very heavily to his other daughter's project when she directed her first film, The Watchers. And this is 100% the first hour of this film is an infomercial for his daughter who is trading as a musician. And this is just a big old advert for her music career. And it seems like the great dad thing to do. It's a film about a man who's got lots of other stuff on that isn't his family, but he really loves his family and therefore is using, M. Night Shyamalan is using his platform to give his daughter a leg up and go, sorry, I wasn't there all the time because I was out making films about murdering people in basements. Here's a bit of a leg up because I'm not going to be able to do this 5 years from now.
Okay.
It feels like a nice gift from a caring father to a daughter he loves.
I like that. That's a nice theory.
About fatherhood, about a father-daughter relationship, how much it means to him. Mm-hmm. And also, I might have killed some people, sorry.
I like that theory. It's a very sweet, endearing way to look at it. And I think it's a very mature way to look at it. I've come up with my own theory, and it's none of those.
Okay. Let me guess. Is it that the Riley in this film is in fact the Riley from Inside Out, and we're now going to go on a 3-episode arc proving that this is a Inside Out spin-off?
You have no idea how close you are to opening up a can of worms, because that sounds fun. You know what I mean? And if you know what I'm like with a trilogy of nonsense,
right.
I'm in.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think Shyamalan's got to a point in his career where he arcade fired straight away. He literally, he hit the ground running.
Early career was incredible.
Because yeah, his first project sucked.
Yeah, he had a few films before Sixth Sense, but we all heard his name for the first time with a piece of cinematic history.
Of course we did.
And then went, what now? And he did another bit of cinematic history. And then we went, what now? And he did another bit of cinematic history.
He did.
And then he did The Happening.
He just started hitting. He started hitting and hitting and hitting. And I think he unintentionally made like a superhero universe before there were superhero universes.
Weird.
Like canonical superhero universes. There was superhero movies and they were connected, but it wasn't like a big cinematic universe, Splits. Right? Shyamalan's got his own.
So Unbreakable was a superhero movie before superhero movies were popular.
Exactly.
Split. Turned it into a franchise and turned it into a connected universe when the MCU was alive and kicking. So, ish. I'll give you an ish on that point, but yes, continue.
But what I'm saying is he did this thing that is massively impressive for someone to do on their own, right on their own, and it's three films that he's just gone, yes, these are connected, and they're at different points in his career, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Incredible. So, he's been hitting like no man's business, just knocking them out of the park. I mean, you've got Signs as well.
The Village. I love The Village. Everyone hates it. I loved it. I didn't get the twist. I know everyone's like, oh, I got the twist. If you don't get the twist, it's a mint film. Signs. Oh, beautiful film.
Incredible film. One of the best films that I've ever seen. My sister scared the absolute living shit out of me when I was a kid.
Right.
Watching Signs for the first time. She threw it. I was lying on the floor in the living room. We were watching it as a family. She threw a pillow at my back. I have never been that scared in my life. I have nightmares
about Mel Gibson
about
being at the end of your bed.
Just reliving it. No, about my sister throwing a fucking pillow every time I'm watching a horror film with my family.
See, I'd be worried more about Mel Gibson, but continue. Fair.
So he's been hitting nonstop and he's been going crazy. And the studios have obviously just looked at him and gone, that there is a cash cow. That there is a man that will just pump out blockbuster after blockbuster after blockbuster. He's changed cinematic history 3 or 4 times. Let's just give him a bit of money. He'll do it again for us. And they start this expectation and this pressure and this sort of cultural bated breath around the name M. Night Shyamalan has been sitting there for decades.
It's a kind read. I mean, I think we all thought he was good.
I thought he was amazing.
I'll go as far as saying we all thought he was good, right?
I thought he was amazing. I loved his early stuff because it was silly, but it was silly sci-fi. And that's where I live. You know what I mean?
This guy
captured my heart. And then he started putting out The Happening and The Visit and stuff like this. And it's like, it's fine. The Visit's fun. It's very funny. It's very good.
Knock at the Cabin's fun, but you're always there.
Knock at the Cabin's fun.
Getting known for being a magician as well and having a gimmick.
Yeah.
You just go, oh, what's the gimmick? What's the trick? What's the twist?
So Shyamalan got to a point in his career where he goes, you know what? I'm done with studios going, expecting, we're giving you this much, we're expecting this much. I'm done with it. I don't want to do it. What I want to do is I want to go and make a silly film about grandkids going to the wrong nan's house. That's what I want to do. That's my film. There's my twist. I'm going to go do it.
Yes.
And I'll make it on my own dollar. So he does it on his own dime and he makes enough money and he's like, fucking hell, that went all right. Go on, I'll do it again to see where we go. He does old.
I don't think you're wrong with what happened. I think your reasons it happened are maybe the wrong way around. In the idea that he's turning down studio money.
No,
so that he can make fun movies.
I don't think he can get money.
Right, the studios aren't offering him money because he makes flop after flop after flop.
Exactly.
And I do feel like you're enjoying his films because they're goofy and they're fun and they're nonsense like Trap.
Yeah, of course.
And they are good, bad in the way that Trap is.
Yeah.
I think for the majority broad audience, what we're seeing is a complete lack of relatability that comes when you are not surrounding yourself with people whose no you respect.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
He's in the George Lucas prequels era where everyone goes,
absolutely not.
This is a terrible idea, but I can't tell M. Night Shyamalan that his twist is nonsense because he made The Sixth Sense and I'm just a runner.
Okay, right? I get that. I can see that, actually. No. I jumped the gun. I'm sorry. You are right. I think towards the end of the Studio Money career, that was exactly it. That was where he was at. No one was telling him no, and he was like, I can just run away with my own thoughts here and do my own little thing. Yeah. But the issue is that he couldn't...
Right, exactly.
Because he has to earn money back, but it's big money because everyone's involved now.
Right.
And also, people's jobs are on the line. Can you imagine being a producer going, I'm going to give Shyamalan a chance?
Yeah.
And then he comes out with The Happening, you're like, oh my God, I need to start job shopping immediately.
So this is the thing that I always find heartbreaking about cancel culture and film flops and things where a project is failed or considered failed or considered enjoyable,
yeah,
because of the actions of one person.
100%.
Because there is one guy somewhere in America who's got a basement filled to the brim with Bill Cosby memorabilia from his career,
yeah,
as a cameraman on the Bill Cosby Show that meant the world to him.
Do you know what I mean?
Right?
It's crazy.
Somewhere there is someone who bet the farm of their career.
Yeah.
On M. Night Shyamalan making another banger.
Yeah.
And that one was The Happening. And you'll see their name come up as exec producer.
Yeah.
And they will never make another film again in their lives. Shyamalan's fine.
Oh,
he's
fine.
Yeah, he's got a 250-acre estate that he can borrow money against.
I think it's 145, but that's fine.
Hyperbole.
It's still massive.
Right. The number of projects I worked on when I was a sound engineer that I was like, I've absolutely bled to the bone here.
Yeah.
And then the artist went, I'm not really into this genre anymore. I'm just going to scrap it. And you're like, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Or they fell out with a music video director. So then the first single didn't have a video. So then it flopped. So everyone went, that person fell off.
Yeah. Yeah. I know exactly where you're coming from. And this is the whole thing, right? But let me explain to you what trap is. What trap is it's, I feel like Shyamalan's experimented with a couple films now. He's been self-financing since The Visit. He's done, the last three films have all been loans against his assets that he's put into making his movies, right?
Yeah, it's literally his assets on the line. Exactly. His assets is on the line.
Yeah, and the budget's getting bigger and bigger. I mean, The Visit was 5 mil. He made enough money to go and make his next film. I think Trap was around 20 mil. Just let me quickly fact check myself. Because it's his biggest budget that he has. 30 million. There you go.
Right, okay.
30 million. Yeah. And as mental as this film is, completely financed by M. Night Shyamalan, $83.6 million at the box office is mental money to be earning back when you've just financed a loan for 30 mil.
You know
what I mean?
And the way the economics of that work for people who are less of a nerd than Ben and I are, is that generally you want to make twice your budget because you need to make marketing costs as well. And you usually spend as much as you spend making the film, you will then spend marketing the film.
Yeah.
So you look at the budget, you double it, and anything over that doubled budget is profit. Now, if you've got a studio picture, percentages start to come out.
People need to get paid, man.
The producers have got to get paid. People need to get paid, right? Because you've paid to make the movie, but that money's been paid by a studio who you now owe a profit margin.
Yep.
So a large percentage of your profit, once you've doubled the budget of the movie, then starts to go back to the studio.
Exactly.
Shyamalan doesn't have that because he's financed it himself.
He has.
So if the film costs 30 and he spent 30 marketing it and it's made 83, that's 23 mil, that a vast majority of which will be going directly into his pocket to fund the next house that he can buy and then borrow against.
Wager with the bank. You know what I mean? He's betting house money and winning. And it's insane that he's doing this. Now, Trap itself, I cannot express how convenient this film is. There is not a drop of real tension because everything that needs to happen specifically, no matter how far-fetched, no matter how mundane, no matter how ridiculous the circumstances would have to be for Josh Hartnett's Cooper to pull this next action off, it was 1,000% guaranteed to happen. If you watch this film for the first time.
Yeah.
And you see them stood on the floor of a concert hall, right? This is a huge stadium, much like the NEC in Birmingham, right?
Right.
Now.
Or the O2 Arena in London, if you're not a savage.
Exactly. If you're not cultured.
Thank you. I prefer that.
Yeah, there you go. So, but there is a moment where Cooper's casually walked into a briefing that's happening mid-show to the SWAT team members that are all gathered there. He just walks in.
Whoa. Sorry, let me rewind slightly there. He goes to buy his daughter a Lady Raven t-shirt from the merch stand. The guy says, come back in 10 minutes. He comes back in 10 minutes. The guy says, I'm going to go get the t-shirt from backstage. Do you want to come with me?
Yeah.
He says, sure thing.
Yeah.
They then chat everything about the FBI operation on the way. And then on the way back to the general admission area from the storeroom that the merch guy has given him, he walks past an FBI briefing and just joins in.
No, sir. This is a different moment. It's a slightly different moment.
There's
stuff that happens in between, and I forgot the stuff in between, but that stuff happens, and it's mental. So he's done all this stuff. He's gone into a briefing. He walks through a crowded room of people that are actively looking for a man fitting his exact description.
Right.
He knows exactly where the sugar is because he's going to blag making a coffee. He knows exactly where the secret stash of donuts is because why not? Mm. He offers them to the police, and on the way out, steals a radio. He's back in the arena. He's stood in the arena with his daughter with a now SWAT radio and earpiece just in his ear.
Yeah.
No one's noticed this. It's mad. Even his daughter's not noticed this. She's stood next to him.
Well, she's been abandoned 6 times by this point in the plot and she's fine with it. So we can infer a lot from that. Yeah.
Yeah. He's OCD. So, he's sitting there and someone in his ear is like, the only way out of this arena is through the backstage. So he then takes the earpiece out because he doesn't need to hear anything else. He's done with that. He knows what his next step is. Where's he going to go backstage? Uh-oh, Lady Raven's finished a song. What's the next one going to be? I did this one with a friend. The fucking concrete floor opens up with no security and no safety. Can you imagine if someone was stood on this sliding concrete floor?
Ben. Here is where I can lay my unique perspective in here, bud. Because
hit me with it,
buddy. I've dual classed in my life. I started out as a sound engineer. And then I respect as a chef.
I thought you were going to say magician.
I've got a few skill points there. Mm-hmm. But there are multiple points in this film that I can fact check. Now, having worked in the music industry, I will assure you that if you go to any arena, especially if it's a kids' event, they are encouraged to have as many unguarded, unrailed, open pits to a 6-foot drop.
See, this is my
inches away from where the kids are set.
I've never been to a kids' concert. Right. This is the thing. In the middle of the day, I've never been to one.
Regardless of if it's a kids' concert or a grown-up concert, no artist has bodyguards.
Yeah,
ever.
To be fair.
And if the artist does have bodyguards and they then are acting scared around a fan you've never seen them with before, they can very clearly under duress say, I'm just going to go take these people by myself in a limousine.
Yep.
And a security firm have to just accept that without question. That's just standard in the music industry, mate.
I'll agree.
I wouldn't know this, all right? That's you know.
That's on me. That's
now
me
the one you should know because you've been to an concert, I'm sure, because I've been to some with you.
Yeah,
is that the big places like the London's O2 Arena or the tiny places like the NEC in Birmingham? People walk around outside the concert all the time.
Yeah.
There are thousands of people in the corridors. Just not watching the concert that they've paid to go and see during the songs.
I mean, you say that, but when I went to go see Kiss, that wasn't true. But that's only because it was a half full arena. I think they over-egged how much they thought the Kiss could pull.
I say that because I'm being ironic and there is not a single person in those corridors when the band
is
on
ever. Of course.
And then from my chef skills, I can tell you, if you are in a kitchen and you see a glass bottle of palm oil in a fryer, you are legally obligated for health and safety reasons to stare at it with an uncovered face.
You have to.
For the 45 seconds it takes for it to explode.
Yeah.
Because it's well known that it will fly burning oil and glass
yeah.
that only hits you in the face but not on the clothes?
Yeah, no, your arms and face. This is just basic science, buddy. I mean, everyone did a GCSE. You know what I mean?
Why do you think chefs wear aprons? It's because clothes are immune to spill damage.
Exactly. See, this is what I'm saying. It's the most convenient film that I've ever seen. If you need a distraction, there is a drunk Asian woman to shove down the stairs. If you need a glimpse backstage, the magic floor staircase opens with zero safety protocol. You need to get a clearance card, Jamie. Need a distraction to get up on the roof? Throw three enormous bottles of oil into a hot deep fat fryer in front of a hungry crowd of at least 150 people. Mm. Rob, look at this clip real quick for me, please. I didn't remember the crowd being this big. This man has walked behind this counter and put three massive jugs into that fryer. Right now watch this. He's just going to casually get back in line. How many people are in this queue? How did not one sausage get mentioned? Going, excuse me, that man just put a bunch of glass bottles in the fucking fryer. Not one person.
Ben. Again, I'm sorry, but as a man who's worked as a chef, I do have to tell you that regularly customers are allowed to come back into the kitchen area and place glass bottles in the fryer.
Got you.
It's so standard that anyone seeing it in a concert environment, if they'd seen an open kitchen before, they've seen it.
This is me being silly. But
you're just being a sweet summer child.
All of this is done with such conviction and such sort of like dread music and thriller music playing in the background. It makes it hilarious. It is hilarious. It's the most fun I've had in the cinema in a long time. Unironically, the most fun I've had in the cinema in a long time. Everything is convenient.
On your previous point, according to M. Night Shyamalan, the pitch and concept for Trap revolved around the question, what if the Silence of the Lambs happened at a Taylor Swift concert?
Ooh.
And I would say this is more like, what if we locked a wizard at a Kidz Bop concert?
I like this. I like this a lot.
Because I feel like that more accurately sums up the film.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Cooper, the star of the film, would have made a lot more sense if the mid-credit roll was just Professor X from the X-Men wheeling in and going, I'm building a team.
I've got a school. I love this.
Because he's an undiagnosed X-Man. There's absolutely no way that this man isn't an undiagnosed X-Man.
He might be undiagnosed something. I don't think it's X-Men, but he's undiagnosed something.
Right. Not OCD, because that's been self-diagnosed.
That's diagnosed, yeah. So... Right. I've actually got something from Shyamalan on this, on what he based it on. So it's based on a real life event.
Right. yes, I read that in the research and I just went, Ben will tell me about that.
So he remembers, so this is Shyamalan. I remember this thing from the 80s when I was a kid. These police officers trapped these criminals by pretending that they'd sent them to the Super Bowl. There were cheerleaders there, a packed stadium and everything. It was very funny.
Right.
Let that settle in. So a group of dangerous criminals have been tricked into going to Super Bowl, and the Shyamalan's like, knee slapper. Absolute knee slapper. Making that one day.
Also, the pitch that I would go with there is that you're locked in there with them, right?
Yeah.
I'd do that. I'd go, oh, hang about. Mm. I thought that this was genius, but I'm now at the Super Bowl with 100 registered sex offenders.
Okay, no, it wasn't a crowd of criminals. It was a couple criminals in a crowd of people. They had to sell it.
I thought it was thousands of sex offenders filling a stadium.
We're going to put on a sex offender Super Bowl. Spoiler, it's held in a jail. Fucking amazing. This is... Bud, I just need to get to this. What the fuck is this?
Right, I'll tell you exactly what this is.
Come on.
I'll tell you exactly why this film exists.
I want to know what the fuck this is to Rob McFarlane.
It goes back to my previous theory about M. Night Shyamalan using this as a platform to launch his daughter's career as a gift to her while he still has the platform he does.
Nice.
But what he does is he sits down with her and she explains that kids are using slang words like crispy.
Mm-hmm.
And he then goes, wicked, I'll take that on board. But rather than slang words, it's TikTok. This film is made for 60-second social media reel clips. This film will be watched on TikTok far more than it ever was in a cinema. Each key part of this film is designed to be clipped out, given a title, and posted to TikTok with, you won't believe what happens, ... Because he sat down with his daughter, and she's gone, this is how all my friends watch films, and this is what they care about. And
incredible.
He's gone, great. I'll cater to that. And that's what this film is. It's a TikTok-first film.
It's good that you say this.
Highlight reels.
It's good that you say this. I have a short paragraph from Shyamalan himself
on
the premise of this film and what he wanted to achieve with it.
Right.
And this is where I'm going to come into What the Fuck This Is by Ben Groves, right?
Okay.
This is Shyamalan. You know, that part kind of came in the last process. It was really Salika and I talking about a movie where music was critical to the movie, that the characters are watching all of the songs. All of the songs.
Right, yeah.
It's a different form of movie than we're used to, and Purple Rain was kind of our inspiration.
Right.
You've seen movies, let's say A Star Is Born or something, where you sing two or three amazing songs, but a full album from beginning to end where the characters are watching every song. Yeah. That was the goal. And it started that way.
Right. Because
which is fine.
It's fine.
It's a good concept for a film,
right? It's a good concept, yeah.
It's not been done. Does it need to be? Don't think so.
No. Well, I don't know. The idea of... So LCD Sound System broke up. They did one incredible album. They followed it up with an even better album. And then they did a third album that was flawless. And the lead singer, James Murphy, said, it's never going to get better than this. So I'm going to do a 3-hour show at Madison Square Gardens and close a band. And they did a concert film of the entire set at Madison Square Gardens, interlaced with documentary as to why they were closing the band.
Oh, I like this.
And that was mint.
Yeah.
And then 5 years later, he did another album and ruined the whole thing. But so there's been proof
yeah.
that you can do a concert film or Stop Making Sense by Talking Heads that can be an engaging narrative as well as a gig.
Yeah.
So to do that with an M. Night Shyamalan movie, sure, I'd love to watch that. This ain't that.
It's not that.
This is 60-second highlight clips.
All right, I kind of got to agree. But then in the last half an hour of the film is where it really comes into its own. The last half an hour of this movie is like, it's the most worst. Insane thing I've ever seen. And it's played off so seriously. Josh Hartnett is an incredible actor. And the fact that he devotes himself as much as he does to this role is amazing.
Right.
It is amazing.
He is an incredible actor, but not in this film.
Dude, listen to the words that are coming out of your mouth. What, you watched the same film that I did, right?
Yeah.
This man plays two characters the entire film, two lead roles the entire film, right? And he does it in tandem. But then also, the material's mental. Like, it's full mental breakdowns, manic scribblings type stuff.
Here's what I'll say. Yeah, okay. Josh Hartnett is awful in this awful film, but the awfulness is what makes the film brilliant. And therefore, we're in a topsy-turvy world where somehow Josh Hartnett's inability to deliver this dialogue makes the film better.
Right? Because he's an incredible actor. He understood the assignment and he ran with it. I'm glad we're on the same page, buddy.
Okay, maybe. In a topsy-turvy world.
Right?
Because this is a bad good film, the lower the score it gets, the better.
Exactly.
And therefore, the worse an actor he is, the better.
Exactly.
It's a bizarre, kinky time.
Exactly, buddy. Dude, this is what I'm saying. When was the last time you saw a film that did that? When was the last time you saw a film that achieved the utter nonsense that Trap does on the budget that Trap has with the caliber of cast that Trap has and everyone just went, what? When was the last time that this ever happened? This is 80s cinema coming back with a massive budget, an incredible director, a great cast, and just making the weirdest film that I've ever seen in a cinema. The amount of people that were cry laughing at some of the parts that were supposed to be dead serious.
Yeah, okay.
It was amazing.
So here's what I'll give you, because I don't think it's a good film. I enjoy it a lot,
exactly.
But it's not a good film.
It's a
what
good
I'll
movie.
Give you is, I think Shyamalan with Trap may have solved the B-movie paradox, right?
Yeah.
If you want to make a good B-movie, what stops it becoming an A-movie, right?
Yeah.
Because if you do your B-movie well enough, like Alien, for instance, they said, let's do a B-movie, but make it AAA.
Sure.
And then we just go, well, it's a cinematic masterpiece. It's no longer a B-movie, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then it's just an independent film.
Or you go with the alternative, like Kung Pao, Way of the Fist, or a deliberately, intentionally goofy movie.
Is that your go-to B-movie?
That's genuinely
upsetting. Okay.
No, it's not my go-to. It's just the reason I mention it is because it's not funny, because it's intentional.
Oh, okay. I see.
Because they're trying to be bad.
Right, okay.
It's no longer a good, bad movie. because it lacks the sincerity. What I feel Shyamalan's done is he's threaded that needle.
Yeah.
Where it comes across as a sincere attempt to make a good film.
Yeah.
Well enough to disguise the fact that it's a hilarious B movie.
That might be it.
Right. It's that.
And let me ask you a question. When was the last time outside of Tromaville,
mm-hmm.
outside of the Troma universe, because they hit and hit and hit.
Yeah.
You will never watch a bad Troma movie. Toxic Avengers, incredible. Sergeant Kabuki, NYPD, incredible. You know what I mean? Frankenhooker, incredible. All these things are like mind-bogglingly good B-movies.
Yeah.
Outside of Troma, when was the last time that anyone fully, truly achieved to thread that needle? That you can think of.
The Room. I would say The Room.
Okay, but that was...
Because that, again, was really sincerely attempting to make a good film.
Okay.
And failing. Here's the thing. It's not funny if you are intentionally falling over for the camera.
Got you.
It's only funny when someone accidentally trips and loses all their teeth on the front step.
100%.
That's the funny thing.
Yeah.
Watching somebody pretend to fall over ain't it.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's slapstick. And as we all know,
right.
I'm not a fan of slapstick. You know what
I mean?
Well,
I mean, you love slapstick, just like you love fantasy.
There you go.
Right?
There you go.
The idea of a sort of Three Stooges in Mordor is just gets your nipples hard. You know, you'd love that film.
Oh, nothing but fantasy. Sign me up, buddy. You know what I mean? Sign me up. I need to ask this question. I know it's a little bit early, but I need it off you now.
Yeah.
What are you rating it?
So I don't believe in the I'm giving it two ratings. Crap that you always pull.
I like the two ratings.
Because I don't think that's how ratings work, right?
You can rate it on different merits. That's fine.
You can rate it on different merits, but at the end of the day, like, you either pass your driving test or you don't. This is a thoroughly enjoyable, terrible film.
Right.
And so I'm going to give it a 7.
Ooh, okay.
Now, it didn't thrill me with its terribleness all the way through, and that's the points it lost. Something like Love on a Leash, there isn't a single scene I can watch where I'm not just abuzz with how incredibly terrible every single point of execution is.
Right.
Where there are large stretches of this movie that are almost, you can kind of almost forget that you're watching nonsense.
Got you.
Because it's not moment to moment nonsense. Not every single development is nonsense. There are points where people are walking across a room and it's shot ably and the soundtrack's fine. You know, I'm back in a real movie. So, It's a 7 from me. What? Why? What about you? I mean, are you going to give us your rating now as well? Or is this just
is a fat 10 from me, buddy. This is an actual fat 10. Like, full. There is no part of this film that I think could be improved upon to make it a better experience.
What about the soundtrack album? Because, I mean, Lady Raven is an in-character official soundtrack. Which I've not listened to.
It's incredible. This is.
Oh, you've listened to it. Yeah.
I listen to it daily. Hear me out on this one. It's a long bit. It's a long con. I just want Lady Raven. I want to be in the top 0.01% of Lady Raven listeners.
Get the T-shirt
when Spotify Wrapped
eventually comes around. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
Every single day for the last, I think it's about 3 months, I have played one Lady Raven song, whether I'm listening to it or not. It's playing on my Spotify.
Though. I know why that is. And it's because if you're in the top 0.01% of listeners on Spotify,
yeah.
You get a special private video from the artist, don't you?
No.
They thank you.
Do you?
Yeah.
That's insane. I didn't even realize.
You did realize that because you're in love with Lady Raven.
Strange.
With her albinoric, weird, bug-eyed.
What a strange thing that I didn't even know about was.
She's the sort of woman that I look at and I go, oh my God, is she okay? What's up with her face? Which means automatically she is the hottest woman that's walked the earth for you.
Yeah, legitimately, Lady Raven is wife. Lady Raven's peak humanity, right? It's humans have evolved to a point where you cannot move past it. Your LCD sound system album 3, that's where you're at, right?
Wow.
Sell it out at Madison Square Garden.
I
just
look
let
at
it go.
Her and I wonder, like, is it too many chromosomes? Is it not enough? Something's up.
You get worried for that. I get worried that there's an extinction level event on the way because we've peaked at evolution and it's just going to wipe the board and start again. Whatever survives, that's what happens next time round. You know what I mean? That's what makes me nervous.
Okay.
She's unbelievably attractive.
Okay.
A little side story on this one, sorry. I don't even know if I should be telling this because it's fucking weird. I went to the cinema.
I mean, nothing can be weirder than you finding her hot, so go for it.
Okay. I went to the cinema with with Andy from Control Alt Critique. Again,
yeah,
go listen.
Yeah, with your mates. Yeah.
On the way out, obviously, Lady Raven is M. Night Shyamalan's daughter in real life.
Yes.
So on the way out of the cinema, I was like, God damn, his daughter is so fit. Mm-hmm. He's so unbelievably attractive. And they didn't clock that I meant M. Night Shyamalan's daughter.
Yeah, because you would have just said his daughter is so attractive.
This is the thing, right? So for a solid 2 hours before we cleared it up and I then showed them a picture of M. Night Shyamalan's daughter, they were like, oh, legitimately, we thought you might have been a pedophile. And I'm like, buddy,
wow.
It's been 2 hours.
Yeah.
Thank you for
that's
the...
That's long enough for the police to turn.
That's a true friendship right there, that is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it? Because I feel like a true friend would sit you down and go, we need to have a chat. Like, if I'd had that interaction, I'd have gone,
yeah.
But mate, no, just apropos of nothing, mate. Do you just want to take a seat? Just want to take a seat over there?
We need to have a quick chat about what you've just said immediately.
Sit down with us, Ben. Yeah. Just take a seat. Why don't you take a seat, Mr. Gross?
How old did you say she
Here
was?
Here are some text messages.
No, I thought that was funny. Anyway.
I mean, funny or traumatic, yeah. I love the idea that
right.
you are comfortable with the idea of people assuming that you're that's just not out of the ordinary for you.
So, in summation, what I'm saying is I listen to Lady Raven once a day.
that's the point we take away
from this whole story, all right?
Okay,
now,
great, are you ready
for the part of the show where it gets really nitty-gritty, where we really get into the mud and the grit and we get down into the depths of what this film really means?
I am, if it takes about 6 minutes, because that's the time we have left.
Yeah, awesome. So it's a quiz called, which M. Night Shyamalan character are you?
Oh, God.
Yes,
this
buddy.
This is going to be bad for me, bud.
Question one, what's your favorite color? Green, yellow, purple, blue, or red?
It's black, so...
stop being
green,
edgy.
Green, purple...
Yellow.
I'll go with purple.
Purple.
Mm-hmm.
Edgelord. What is your hobby?
It's a nice color.
What is your hobby? Do you read comics? Do you help people? Weightlifting? Discussing and interacting with people in difficulty to help them with their personal problems? Exploring new territories? Teach and interact with others about scientific stuff? Being alone? That's a great hobby. Have fun with my friends? Or spending time with helpless girls? Weird emoji face?
Ben. My hobby is this podcast, so it's clearly option three.
Discuss and interact with people in difficulty to help them with their personal problems.
Yeah.
That's the one. That's a good hobby.
That's the one.
That's a good hobby.
That's what we do here.
Oh, you can pick a couple, I think. Is that the only one? We'll stick with just that one. Where's next? How do I fucking progress? Okay, here we go.
That's literally the subject of this podcast for 2 years, Ben. Okay. We've not cracked it yet.
Right. This is going to be a difficult one because it's pictures... But I'm going to describe each picture to you. Choose an aesthetic. The first one is like, it's a broken glass pane, but it's comic book, like 80s comic book style. The next one is a painting of like a period thing with a wagon and some horses and some trees. It's lovely.
Right, okay.
The next one is what I can only assume is some edgelords sort of vampire werewolf, Beauty and the Beast type thing. There's a woman and like a beast creature kissing in the night.
I mean, it's going to be that, isn't it? Come on, let's just go with that.
The one after the next one's going to be that. The next one's a crop circle. That one's me. This one is like a piss blue Fincher filter with a chick with wind blowing in her hair and listening to music on headphones.
It's that one.
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Just go with that. Let's skip the rest.
I mean, you say that, but the last one is a taxidermy lion killing a zebra, but they're both in human form, like human stance.
No, go with sad girl headphones.
Sad girl. You sure you don't want the one-legged ghost in a laundromat?
I'm good.
Okay, all right. I just wanted to make sure. Let's go next on this one. What's your personality? Mysterious, manipulative, scared, hardworking, patient, motherly, intellectual, protective, unpredictable, or reserved?
Ben, I'll let you pick.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Patient. What is your greatest fear? Germs? What? Germs, sexual predators, ghosts, the person I love let me down, water, being someone insignificant, whether the person that I love is hurt and or worse, big bad dogs.
I mean, I'm going to go in order of, I mean, look, some of these are not very subtle. Okay. No. Some of these are incredibly clear. What,
yeah.
Crop circles. I wonder what for, but let's go with sexual predators.
That's your biggest fear.
There are lots of things that are scary on there, mm-hmm. but being raped is probably number one.
Yeah, no, that's right up there. This is why it caught me off guard. I was like, this is obviously like it beats ghosts. Do you know what I mean?
Why
is Big Bag Dogs on there when you've got sexual predators lurking around? This is mental. Anyway, what are you often blamed for? Not talking enough. Okay, this quiz is mental. I'm going to read these in order that they're on the fucking thing, right?
Okay, yeah.
Not talking enough. Other. Being a weirdo. Being a stalker. Being a freak. Being too absorbed in my work. Being distant. Or using extremist methods to achieve my goals. Other is the second choice on this quiz, buddy.
Yeah, but then what's the third one?
Being a weirdo.
See, they're being meta.
Ooh,
now, Shyamalan. Again, mate, I'll let you pick.
Okay.
Because you know me better than I do.
Okay, what are you often blamed for, though? I'm going to say other. In what field would you practice a profession? Spiritism. That's what it says. Right. Spiritism.
Is sound engineer / chef on there?
No. So you've got spiritism.
It's so underrepresented in media, man.
Really is. This is why you should make more songs, more films about Lady Raven. Get a sequel in the works. I'm in for it.
She's not a chef, mate.
No, but she's a singer.
Right, so she might have a sound engineer who's also a chef.
Yeah, you don't know.
Okay, it'd be so nice to be seen. There's just not enough representation.
It's a shame that what field would you practice a profession in? It's a shame that sarcastic cunt isn't on here. Do you know what I mean? So the options are spiritism, psychiatry, security, art, metallurgy.
Yeah,
that's the one.
Metalwork.
Yeah. I understand the career. It's just I'm fucking broken in the brain. Other or science.
I'll go with art.
Art. I like that. I can see you in that. What's your favorite Shyamalan movie? Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs, Village, Lady in the Water, The Happening, or Split?
Let's go with The Sixth Sense because I'm a rational, sane person who's seen his films.
Calculating. Oh, okay.
Ben, what have you done?
You are Elijah Price, who is...
Of course I am.
Samuel L. Jackson in Unbreakable and Glass.
Yeah. Do you know when that was decided?
When?
On question one, when I picked purple.
Yeah, 1,000%. That's
the only part of that quiz that matters.
There's no other part of you that matches this character in any way, shape, or form. If you'd have picked weightlifting, it would have broken the internet. It would have opened a small black hole in the middle of BuzzFeed, and it would have been dead. Death. You know what I mean?
100%.
Well, 100%. I'm glad that we found out which M. Night Shyamalan character you are, and I feel like I know you a little bit better now, buddy. I feel like this was good. This was nice. I enjoyed it. But unfortunately, mate, that's it. It's the end of the show.
Oh, really?
The end of the show. This is it. We're out of time. We are at the end of the show. Dear listener, we love you all so much. Thank you for hanging out with us. Thank you for the support. It means the fucking world. Now go tell your friends how much fun it is in here. Get them in. Bring them with you. You know what I mean? Get them with you.
And to thank you for spending an hour of your time with us, especially at the start of the week. We know a lot of you listen on a Monday. Ben's going to wrap up the thoughts, themes, and feelings of the, I mean, good luck to you, of Trap, M. Night Shyamalan's Trap, into a little Monday motivational pep talk to help you get through the week, because mm-hmm. we all need that help.
Yeah.
You give us that help, so Ben's going to return it sincerely with this very motivational pep talk.
This is it.
While I sort of mask and I tell you to do what the world always tells you to do and just tell you to... consume.
Listen, if there's one thing that we can all take away from Trap, and I think it's a universal lesson, it's that everything happens for a reason. The reason is exposition. So whatever it is you're trying to get done and it needs explaining to someone like who's not a part of it, it will happen. I'm just saying. So if you need to get from A to B without getting captured by FBI agents who are figuratively and almost metaphorically inside your asshole for many hours, just pretend your kid's got leukemia. Do you know what I mean? It gets you out of everything. It got him without the leukemia ploy. Josh Hartnett would have been caught. I'm telling you, he would have been caught before drug pie. That's all I'm saying.